The Iowa Department of Corrections operates 9 institutions throughout the state. Together, they employ over 3,000 people to supervise over 8,000 adult inmates. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and this hour we continue our summer series on Iowa towns with a look at how prisons and correctional facilities shape the communities where they're located. In the first half hour, we'll focus on the communities of Fort Madison, site of the state penitentiary, and Fort Dodge, site of a correctional facility. And then a look at Rockwell City, and finally over to Northeast Iowa. That's all coming up right after a look at this hour's news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The Iowa Department of Corrections operates 9 institutions throughout Iowa, and together they employ over 3,000 people and supervise over 8,000 adult inmates. This hour, we continue our summer series on Iowa towns with a look at how prisons and correctional facilities shape the communities where they're located. Later in the hour, look at Rockwell City, and finally in the hour over to Anamosa in Northeast Iowa. But in this first half hour, we'll focus on the communities of Fort Madison, home of the Iowa State Penitentiary, which dates back to the 1830s, and Fort Dodge, the site of a correctional facility that was opened in 1998. Joining me now to talk about these communities, Tim Gobble. He is a Fort Madison native and the executive director of Fort Madison Partners. Welcome to our program, Tim.
Thank you very much.
Also joining us, Dennis Plautz. He is the CEO of the Greater Fort Dodge Growth Alliance. He's been at work in the community for 37 years. Hi, Dennis. Welcome to our program.
Well, good morning. Thank you.
And this is interesting to have the two of you together to talk about your respective communities and the influence you're on your communities due to the correctional facilities. Iowa State Penitentiary, of course, very old, dating back to a time before Iowa was even a state, and the Fort Dodge Correctional Facility, relatively new. Let's start out with you, Tim. Tell us, of course, no one in Fort Madison alive knows the town without its connection to the Iowa State Penitentiary. How does it shape the community?
How does it shape the community?
How does it today? How would you say it shapes the community compared to a community that doesn't have such an institution?
Well, obviously, I mean, it's just like any other industry, you know, it's something that's going to be beneficial because of the employment base that it has, not only within the walls for the correction officers and staff, but just for the contractors that work with the prison industries and everything else. So it's a great fit for our community because of the type of I guess the dollars that go back into the community because it's here.
Is it really an industry just like any other? If it was a private industry, we would be open to the ups and downs of the economy. You're fairly well insulated with the Iowa State Penitentiary, aren't you?
Yes, we are. I mean, well, obviously the level of crime impacts the industry, such as corrections. And, you know, you listen to what the legislators are saying and the how crime it will be increasing within the next 10 years and the capacity that the facilities have now, will they potentially could outgrow. So, I mean, obviously that's going to be an effective piece as well.
Mm-hmm. You are executive director of
the Fort Madison Partners.
Fort Madison Partners. Mm-hmm. Tell us how that works. What is the goal of that organization?
The Fort Madison Partners is an umbrella organization that encompasses the Chamber of Commerce, Fort Madison Main Street, the Fort Madison Economic Development Group, tourism, and what they have is the Southeast Iowa Regional Riverboat Commission, which is a nonprofit organization that is they gain the gaming dollars associated with Catfish Bend in this region.
Mm-hmm. What are the chief challenges you find yourself facing?
Well, obviously, you know, growth in a smaller town, an industrial town, there's always the challenge of ups and downs with the economy. The people, you know, with laying off and hiring the appropriate people. Sometimes we have some issues with the qualified workforce, but we've got a great community college, luckily in our own backyard, that is pretty strong with the retraining capabilities to mm-hmm. get those people up to speed.
What is that tied to, the qualities of a trained workforce? When does that ebb and flow, and why?
Well, obviously, to make things run smoother, you're going to need your trained workforce, and a lot of industries nowadays are going to more of the electronic, automation. So you need to have those people that have that skill set that can actually operate that equipment, as well as the skill set of how to maintain it should it something break down. So, I mean, there's a lot of new pieces that obviously are going to require a lot of retraining.
Mm-hmm. Let's go over to you, Dennis Plautz, CEO of the Greater Fort Dodge Growth Alliance. The Fort Dodge Correctional Facility has been open in Fort Dodge for, 16 years, since 1996, is that right?
Correct.
Can you give us a little background? How was it decided that the new facility would come to Fort Dodge?
Well, sort of to echo what Tim said, we actually looked at the facility as an economic development project, and we competed with 18 other communities at that time to get Fort Dodge selected as the site. When we did that, I think several of the reasons that we were successful was that we involved the entire community. Obviously, there are questions that people have. There are certain stereotypes that people might initially have about having a prison in your community. And what we did was try to involve the entire community, from our churches to our governments to our schools to our businesses, and educate them on why this is an economic development project, and educate them on things that are typical stereotypes, like, well, maybe you'll be a magnet for people locating in your community or being released into your community that you would not want, when in fact, we were able to preempt some of that by educating people on things such as when people are released, they go back to where they originated from. They're not all released in a community that houses the prison.
Is that to any degree true, that what you call a stereotype, that people being released will settle down right on your doorstep?
We found that, that was a concern that some people had, and what we tried to do was show them that this is a positive thing. For example, having all of these correctional officers located in your community is a good thing. Just think of all the extra trained law enforcement people you have located there. We tried to, as Tim said, approach it from the standpoint that it is sort of a recession-proof industry. There aren't a lot of those. And we really modeled the economic development impact. Right now, we've got 293 people employed in the prison with an average wage of $55,000 plus benefits, and according to Dave Swenson, the jobs multiplier on that's about 1.34 here. So really, they're contributing about 393 jobs to our community, which is significant.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are those in that job multiplier factor you have there? Spin out some of the jobs that are not at the facility but are connected to the facility or there because of the facility.
Yeah, exactly. For example, the annual appropriation for the facility in Fort Dodge is about $29.8 million a year. And when you look at jobs, you get up to 393. When you look at a labor income multiplier, Dave Swenson has indicated that's about 1.19 here. So that takes your payroll multiplier up to $19.3 million. Mm-hmm. Of additional payroll within Webster County as a result of having the facility located here.
You said there was a lot of awareness raising needed in Fort Dodge to convince a majority of the community that they wanted this.
Well, I think what I'm saying is that what we tried to do was preempt a lot of the concerns that people had by getting everyone involved rather than having this run by a committee.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found was that we really had very little adverse reaction to locating the facility here in the end, and I think that had an impact on why we were selected over many of the other communities that were competing for the same prison. It was more than that, but I think you're not going to locate one where somebody doesn't want it.
I know that both of you, Tim Gobble and Dennis Plautz, you're in the business of promoting your communities, but I wonder if you'd be willing to share what we've talked about, the positive side and the stereotypes, the misconceptions. Are there some downsides to having a correctional facility, a prison located in your community, Tim Gobble?
I wouldn't. There's always the thought that there's a downside. But with any community, especially based upon a prison, the type of individuals that are attracted to this location, they will have their families follow them a lot of times, just because if someone is convicted of something up in the northwest corner of Iowa, for them to come visit them in the southeast corner is going to take a good day travel time. So a lot of times they will have an opportunity to relocate. It's one of those things you hate to stereotype, but, a lot of times they aren't necessarily the workforce, people that are wanting or looking to enter the workforce. So I hate to say that I want to label everybody that way, but there is that chance that there's going to be those families that relocate that aren't necessarily the most positive spin for your community.
Right. Do you worry also, does that perhaps draw in some gang activity, too, related to the prison?
I don't know that the prison does. There are other elements that I think can do that just as easy. Any kind of industry that's looking for a lower-level employment base that, reaches into an inner city or something like that, and to bring them here, can bring that gang activity as well. I don't necessarily feel as though the gangs follow a prisoner. There may be gangs inside the walls, but what happens on the outside, I have not seen it. Now, I don't know about the other location.
Dennis Plautz, tell us about that. Do you see this as a problem, the relocation of families connected with inmates, and what do you do about it?
Well, we've surveyed a lot of things. That's one thing that would be difficult to survey, and I don't know that I have a good answer for that. I would echo what Tim said, but I haven't noticed it here, and it hasn't been a topic within the community in the years since it was built. I know we've surveyed. We get about 1,400 visitors a year to the facility. And I have not heard or been aware of problems that have resulted from it. It would be something that would be nice to know, but it has not been discussed. One thing I might comment on, our facility is located in the middle of town. It's probably, I would say, within shouting distance of Friendship Haven, a retirement home, our community college, and Trinity Regional Medical Center, and yet most people don't even know it's there because it's separated by a high-grade railroad and just geographically not visible. So I think generally since it's been built, we've just seen no negative impacts, nor has it been a discussion within the community. I worked for the city for quite a number of years, and in all the council meetings I went to, I don't recall anyone ever having an issue with the facility in Fort Dodge.
Dennis Plautz is with us, CEO of the Greater Fort Dodge Growth Alliance, and Tim Gobble, Fort Madison native and executive director of the Fort Madison Partners, talking today as part of our summer series about Iowa towns, with a look at how prisons and correctional facilities shape the communities where they're located. Joining us now, Sharon Scholl-Nabolsi. She is the owner of Scholl Real Estate, that's based in Fort Madison. Welcome to our program, Sharon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
And I'd like to have you give us a perspective of someone in real estate based in Fort Madison, where the Iowa State Penitentiary is. Generally speaking, how does it affect real estate when you talk with your counterparts in other communities?
The only effect that it has is on newcomers to town, and generally they're kind of dubious or leery about living in a community where there's a prison, and since I've been born and raised in Fort Madison and I've sold real estate here for 37 years, I assure them that it is not a fear that they need to worry about.
What are the specific questions you get most often?
Well, how often do they break out of prison?
And, is it weekly, monthly, yearly?
Well, it doesn't happen very often, and in my lifetime, I can only think of two or three times. And I tell them, I said, you know, when convicts get out of prison, they want to get as far away from here as they can. And since we're right here on the Mississippi, they generally either swim the river or they go north or south. They don't stay in town. So there really is no concern. We people who are locals, we don't even think about it anymore.
For anyone wondering, the last escape from the Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison, I believe, was 2005. Two prisoners escaped. Correct me if I'm wrong, Tim or Sharon.
I think you're correct.
Okay, so back to the real estate. You get some very strange questions or just surprising questions that tell you there are some there's a real stigma attached to a penitentiary town.
Well, most people have never lived in a community where there's a prison, and so right away they think, oh my gosh, the crime is high. You know, should we be scared about this? So it's been my job all these years to assure them that it is not. Look at me. I've lived here all my life and have never had a problem. And the community itself has never had a problem. We have a great police force, and there is a canine unit in the prison, and there's a CERT team in the prison, and when this does happen, as I said, they just get as far away from this area as they possibly can. So I've usually been able to, you know, alleviate all their fears.
Mm-hmm. Sharon, what can you say about property values in
it doesn't affect.
There is no positive or negative effect, nothing?
No.
Mm.
There's only two or three small homes that are even on the same street where the prison is, and they are even below our medium price range. And most of those people have lived there for years and years and years, and there hasn't been much turnover in those two or three homes. But no, it really doesn't affect. We are so happy that they're our largest employer that we have all these people who work at the prison and, you know, spend their money in Fort Madison and keep our community viable. We were nervous that when they were building the new prison, that they were going to move it to the center of the state. So we were very happy that didn't happen.
Will the new prison generate more businesses? Will it change the character of Fort Madison?
Well, it's going to employ more people. They've decrease their workforce right now due to restraints from the state corrections on their budget. But
right.
They're somewhere around 400 employees now, but they're hoping when they open to increase to around 600 employees. So I actually think it will maybe bring more people to town. We have the highest unemployment rate in Iowa here in Fort Madison, or in Lake County, rather.
The highest unemployment rate.
Right.
What is your rate? Do you happen to know?
It's just under 10, I think. It was up around 11.
Was that Tim or Tim trying to get in there?
Right,
Tim?
Yeah, it's about 8.1 right now.
8.1%. And what can you attribute that to?
Well, some of that goes to not only, you know, people maybe that be laid off, but there's always, with every community, you've got those that are unemployable. And it's just sometimes it takes a lot of retraining to get these people back into the workforce.
Mm-hmm. What can you say, Tim, about attracting business or industry that is not related to the Iowa State Penitentiary to Fort Madison? Is that problematic because you're sort of a one-horse town?
What do you mean?
Do industry look at you differently as a possible location for expansion or relocation because of the Iowa State Penitentiary there?
Oh, absolutely not. It has no bearing one way or the other. It just adds to the fact that we have the workforce here that for the prison itself, but it does not have any bearing of yes, I want to come here because it's the prison mm-hmm. town.
And I was going to comment earlier when Tim was talking about having a great community college here. The community college does help prisoners get their GEDs. They do have classes inside the walls and help a lot of the prisoners who, for no other way, could ever get their GED. And I have attended a couple of those graduations, and it's quite a moving experience to hear the inmates give a speech on how proud they are that they have finally graduated from high school.
Mm-hmm. To what extent do inmates work in the community or are somehow supervised in any work in the community? Does that happen at all in Fort Madison, Tim?
Yeah, it does. The city uses the prison, when I say the minimum security, not the maximum. The minimum security prisoners will go and they do a lot of the city, the parks and the cemeteries. And then they help a lot with, city, cleanups and that type of thing. And we just had an event this last weekend that I worked with them, putting fencing and things around to kind of patrol the area or keep the area clear, if there's any kind of hazards. So, I mean, they're a great bunch of guys to work with. And, you normally wouldn't think that, but they're extremely helpful and appreciative that they had the opportunity, and I assume it's because they got to get out for the day.
Right. It's used as a reward, I'm sure, for the facility.
Absolutely.
Dennis Plouts, in Fort Dodge, do you have inmates working in your community, too, released under supervision?
We do, but most of them are from Rockwell City. But one thing I might point out, one of the reasons I think that contributed to getting the facility here was that we actually built an industrial building for the prison where we can use prison inmates on private, in conjunction with private primary sector companies that go in there. For example, we have a pontoon manufacturing company here that uses certain inmates that can go in there and work.
So this is sort of a supervised, more secure location outside the prison where prisoners can go to work.
Well, no, it's actually inside the prison, but we built the building for them, and they actually bring the equipment into the prison and they do the work there. And what it does, it gives inmates things to do. It gives them training skills to reduce the level of recidivism, or to keep people from coming back into prison because it gives them employable skills once they get out. So I think that has had some real value to both the prison, the prisoners, and the community.
Dennis Plouts, CEO of the Greater Fort Dodge Growth Alliance, Tim Gobble, Executive Director of Fort Madison Partners, and Sharon Scholl Nambolsi, owner of Scholl Real Estate based in Fort Madison. Tim, Dennis, Sharon, thank you all for joining us this first half hour with a look at your communities.
Thank you, Ben.
Coming up in just a moment, we continue with this look at Iowa towns and how prison and correctional facilities shape the communities where they're located. When we come back, we'll shift our focus over to Rockwell City and finally over to Northeast Iowa and to Anamosa. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Great to have you with us this afternoon. The Iowa Department of Corrections operates 9 institutions throughout Iowa, and together they employ over 3,000 people to supervise over 8,000 adult inmates. And this hour, we're continuing our summer series on small towns with a look at how prisons or correctional facilities shape the communities where they're located. Joining me now, Lowell Stuhlman. He's Public Works Superintendent for the city of Rockwell City. Rockwell City is just west of Fort Dodge and is the home to the North Central Correctional Facility. That's a minimum security facility, which is home to about 500 inmates, most of them considered low-risk offenders. Lowell Stuhlman joins us now from his shop in Rockwell City. Welcome to our program.
Good afternoon.
I understand that you work with offenders at the prison. Describe the work that you have them involved in.
Well, we pick up an inmate each day. We usually have one here during the week, and they just help us with about anything we need. We have to be careful as to what we do as far as putting them in any kind of supervisory positions or anything like that, but otherwise they pretty much do anything that we do.
Mm-hmm. So what would be some of the tasks?
Mowing, trimming, I mean, anything that we need to repair. If they've got the skill levels, we put them to work doing those sort of things.
Mm-hmm. Do you have different people? Does it rotate around, or do you have someone for weeks, one person?
It just depends. Sometimes we'll have them for a week or two, and they'll be discharged or get a parole. Sometimes they're here for a year before that happens.
Mm-hmm. This is a minimum security facility, but I have to believe that getting out of the facility to work in the community is a reward for an inmate.
Oh, absolutely. Most of them say they'd much rather be out here working all day than sitting in there doing nothing. So
have you ever had any problems with people who've come to work from you from the correctional facility?
Oh, not on the most part. You know, once in a while we get one that you just have to take him back and say, hey, it's not working out. But otherwise, most of them have been pretty good. They appreciate a chance to get out and learn some new skills, and most of them are very good.
How would you say the North Central Correctional Facility shapes the community of Rockwell City as a whole?
Oh, I think they're getting pretty much used to the fact that we have inmates working amongst us in the city, and a lot of our volunteer organizations go and get the training that it takes to have inmates working among them, and you know, there's lots of different organizations that get the help that they need from out there. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to afford to hire someone to do
mm-hmm.
it.
Is there ever a feeling in Rockwell City that residents need to take any kind of extra precautions because of the proximity to the facility or the fact that some offenders work in the community?
Oh, I don't think people are real concerned about that. I know we certainly aren't. We get to know the guys pretty well, and most of them say, boy, that'd be really dumb for me to try to do anything, escape or anything, when I've got such a short time left to go before I get out. So they don't want to take a chance on ruining their chances of getting out and going back home and mm-hmm. getting a real job.
Have you ever had the chance to get to know an inmate personally?
Most of the time, if you have one that you just click with, you know, you can, you know, get to. I know one that was here for almost a year. He keeps in touch with me quite regularly as far as what he's doing now, and that he's still staying in good graces with what he's doing, and he's got a job. And so, I mean, it's really good to know that they appreciate what you've been able to do for them here, and that they're out and working in their communities and being a productive citizen again.
Excellent. We'll end on that positive note. Lowell Stuhlman, Public Works Superintendent for the City of Rockwell City, home to North Central Correctional Facility. Lowell Stuhlman works with offenders at the prison. Lowell Stuhlman, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
My next guest is Ty Thomas. Thomas is a forestry technician for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and prior to taking this job, he worked for the Iowa Department of Corrections for 18 years. Now, Thomas makes use of inmates from the Luster Heights Work Camp. That's a satellite facility under the control of the Anamosa State Penitentiary, and it houses about 85 inmates. Ty Thomas, welcome to our program.
Well, thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
Now, I understand you take a crew of several inmates into the Yellow River State Forest. That's a beautiful hilly forest in northeast Iowa in Allamaquis County, and you do this year-round. How many inmates do you take, and what work do they do?
We take out approximately three inmates from the camp there, and they do pretty much anything that we have to have done. We clear trails, make trails. We run the sawmill down here, and just general maintenance of the 8,600 acres that we have to keep up.
Mm-hmm. Even though it sounds like it could be hot and hard work, especially around this time of year, I imagine the men see it as a privilege to spend the day outside the penitentiary walls.
They really do. In fact, sometimes when we're having to train in other areas and can't pick them up, they're pretty much bummed out. They do enjoy the work down here, and it's a great place for them to get out and learn some new skills.
Is this free labor for you at the Department of Natural Resources?
It's not necessarily free labor. There is a minimal charge per inmate that comes out. It's a little bit over $4 a day, which per man, which I guess is a bargain at any labor market price.
Mm-hmm. How long has this program been going on?
Well, history of this program, it dates all the way back to 1946.
Hmm.
The permanent camp at Lester Heights was put up there in 1963 in the Lester Heights unit, which is a part of our forest here at Yellow River.
Mm-hmm. What kind of offenses have the inmates who work for you committed?
Well, it kind of runs the gamut. Mainly, we follow the trends, of course, for crime in the nation, a lot of drug offenses, and some alcohol-related problems.
Mm-hmm. Nothing worse than that?
Well, that's probably the majority of it. There's still some thefts and non-violent offenders or non-violent crimes are the ones that can work out in the public sector.
Yellow River State Forest is, anyone who's visited it knows how beautiful it is, a gorgeous hilly wilderness area. Also an area where an inmate could, if he escapes, elude capture easier than, say, a corn or a bean field. Or have I watched Cool Hand Luke too many times?
I think you've been watching that too many times.
All right.
We're as you know, we're a pretty rugged area, and that kind of works to our favor also. There's not too many ways in and out, and to be honest with you, the guys that we have working here aren't looking for that anyway. They're nearing the end of their time, and they're just here to work.
How does having these inmates work in the Yellow River State Forest affect the communities in that area, or does it?
It does. Back when I worked with corrections, the programs have allowed them to get things accomplished that they normally could not. I know when back in the early 2000s, when the budget was tight, and they had talked about closing down Lester Heights, the community actually are the ones that saved Lester Heights.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the work that had been done.
All right, Ty Thomas, forestry technician for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thank you for having me on, and I invite everybody from the state of Iowa to come up and check out this awesome place we have up here in the Northeast.
Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant, but he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes.
And my final guest today in this look at the role prisons and correctional facilities they play in our communities is Andy McKean. He's a practicing attorney from Anamosa, also former Jones County supervisor, former state representative, and state senator of many years. In total, 32 years of public service. What a great pleasure to have you on our show, Andy McKean.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be with you.
We've got about 10 minutes to talk. Your great-grandfather is a good place to start. That's where Anamosa's prison facility started. John McKean, a state senator and judge in the 1800s, he introduced a bill that to have the state penitentiary located in Anamosa. And our listeners, for those who don't know, Anamosa is home to the Anamosa State Penitentiary, formerly known as the Iowa Men's Reformatory, a medium maximum security prison. It's the largest in Iowa, housing over 1,200 inmates, established in 1872. Andy, you have done a lot of research on this, on your great-grandfather and his role. Tell us, How did Anamosa become the site of the state penitentiary? And tell us about the critical role your father, your great-grandfather, played.
Well, my great-grandfather was in the state Senate back in the 1860s and 1870s, and at that time, the state was looking to have a second penitentiary in Iowa. They had just one at that time at Fort Madison. And my great-grandfather lobbied long and hard to have Anamosa selected as the second location. And I think the reason they were able to get it was because of the proximity of the stone quarry. And believe it or not, the prison was built almost entirely by inmate labor at very minimal cost to the state of Iowa. Shortly after it was announced that the prison was going to be located in Anamosa, there was a meeting here in town, and I have my great-grandfather's scrapbook, and there's a very interesting account of that meeting. I think most people were pretty pleased that the prison was coming to town, but there were some who weren't. And one individual said, Senator McKean, how come you didn't get us a college for Anamosa instead of a prison? And according to the newspaper account, my great-grandfather replied, well, the answer to that is simple. Colleges come and go, but prisons stay.
Mm.
And it's still here 150 years later and 140 years later, I guess, and it has always been and still is the largest employer in Jones County.
Andy McKean, earlier in the program we talked about with representatives of Fort Madison, also Fort Dodge. Fort Dodge, a very recent correctional facility there. They talked about the awareness raising that needed to happen in order to have the community welcome the prospect of a prison in their midst. Do you think that they would deal? Your great grandfather was dealing with the same sort of awareness raising in his community.
Probably to some degree.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did it? What other cities were in the running? Do you know? In addition to Anamosa,
that I don't know.
Mm, okay. So let's talk a little bit more about the more recent times. What were your biggest challenges in regards to the Anamosa State Prison when you were state representative and state senator representing the area?
Well, when I was first elected back in 1978, I had an occasion to visit quite a bit with friends and neighbors who were employees at the of course at that time it was called the Reformatory. And I was very concerned at how little appreciation these folks were receiving in the way of adequate pay and benefits for the very important job they were doing. And one of my early missions in the legislature was to work to see improvement in pay and benefits for correctional employees. And I'm very glad to say that I think there's been some success in that regard, and that the job does receive the respect it deserves, because it's very, very important work.
What sort of arguments did you have going against you? I suppose market forces, we should pay what the market determines?
Well, I think everyone's always concerned about keeping the budget balanced and keeping expenses low, and I think some of that was on the back of the correctional employees, and I think we just needed to have people there in the legislature making the argument that if you want to attract and keep good employees, you need to give the job the attention and respect it deserves.
You also did some work with prison farms. What was that?
Well, I was also very disappointed, as were many Anamosans, that the prison farms were being dismantled by do-gooder-type bureaucrats who felt it was somehow beneath the dignity of prisoners to work. And we worked very, very hard to try to reestablish prison farming in Iowa. Believe it or not, there was a time when the prisons were absolutely self-supporting between prison industries and prison farming. There was hardly any state expense whatsoever in running our prisons. We certainly haven't gotten back to that situation yet, but I'm glad to say that prison farming is alive and well still in the state of Iowa, and we have a cow-calf operation that I believe is self-sustaining, and the food, of course, that improves the quality of food for everybody in the correction systems, and also they have a very good vegetable operation, too, although I don't know how it's faring with the miserable drought we're all suffering through this year.
Mm-hmm. In terms of prison farming, do all of the Department of Corrections facilities in Iowa have some form of prison farming, I assume, in their immediate vicinity?
I think the majority do. I'm not sure if everyone does. And I should make it very clear that there's a careful process in determining which inmates are responsible enough and the least amount of a safety risk to assume those kind of jobs.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, over the years, with your years of contact, your intimacy with Anamosa and the Anamosa State Penitentiary, what kind of misconceptions have you run into about the prison and about a prison community?
Well, I'll tell you one funny story that happened to me one time, not many years ago, when I was driving back and forth to Des Moines every week. I hit a really bad sudden snowstorm. Oh, I think it was somewhere near Kellogg, and it was so bad, there was no visibility at all, and I pulled off the road and finally decided that I just couldn't continue on and went to the nearest farmhouse where there was a light. And I knocked on the door, and a lady answered, and I explained my predicament, and I said I would appreciate a place to stay until the storm abated. And she said, "Well, where are you from?" And I said, "Anamosa." And she visibly recoiled, because I think she might have thought I was an escapee. But I told her I was a state senator from there, and I told her she could certainly call her own state senator to make sure I was who I said I was.
Was she fine after that?
She was a little bit concerned, but she did invite me in, and she was very hospitable, and I spent the night there. And I think by the time I left, she was convinced that I was not an escapee anyway.
Is that fairly common to run into this sort of reaction? You said she recoiled. How many people perhaps recoil inside and don't show that?
Well, I think when people hear the name Anamosa, they think immediately of the prison. And, of course, people think of prisons as dark, forbidding places. And here in Anamosa, the prison is just a part of everyday life. We all take it for granted. There have been virtually very, very few safety concerns over 140 years. And in fact, I might say that I think people in Anamosa are very proud of the facility. It's a very well-run institution. It's a great employer, and actually, it's a thing of beauty. It's an architectural masterpiece.
And what about the architecture? You said it was quarried right there.
Yeah. Well, it's made out of local local limestone that was in the Stone City area. But it almost looks like a castle. In fact, it's called the White Palace of the West by many people. A beautiful facility.
Mm-hmm. We have just a minute or so left. Is there a story behind the name change from Iowa Men's Reformatory? When did that take place?
It took place. Oh, I was in the legislature at the time, and in fact, I floor managed the bill. We changed it to penitentiary to just make it clear that the Anamosa facility was handling some of the more difficult prisoners in the prison system. I think there were a lot of people who thought that by the word reformatory, that somehow it was a prison that was dealing with people who were not high-risk prisoners. But both Anamosa and Fort Madison have a significant share of people who are significant safety risks.
Okay. Thank you very much for spending this time with us, Andy McKean. Practicing attorney from Anamosa. You're still practicing, huh?
Still am to a degree.
Very good. Thank you for taking time out of your practice to join us. Interesting. Such a long career. 32 years of public service to add to that resume. Andy McKean, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome.
And we're winding up today. Want to mention that tomorrow, if you're like many Americans, you've become increasingly frustrated with a lack of bipartisan cooperation in Congress and the disappearance of centrist politicians willing to work together to solve the nation's problems. Tomorrow on this program, my guest is columnist and Woodrow Wilson Center scholar Linda Killian. She's the author of a new book. It's called The Swing Vote, The Untapped Power of Independence. Also, analysis of the latest politics. We'll have Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College here, Bruce Gronbeck of the University of Iowa, to pick apart the latest political developments, as we love to do on Politics Wednesday. I hope you'll join us. River to River is produced by Alex Hoyer and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Emily Woodbury. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Our theme music written and performed by the River Monks. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.